to the Huffcast, episode 9. We are Wednesday, May 9th, and guess what, you guys? It happened. We had the baby. We had a little baby girl. Sarah's water broke on Friday afternoon. We waited a few hours, and then called the doctor, and she said, come on in. We got some nice ladies to help watch the kids, and we went in, and they checked her dilation. They said, uh-oh, that's not the top of a baby's head. What in the world is that? We're going to call the doctor. So I'm like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean, what's that? What's that? You can't say what's that. You have to tell me something. What's a foreign object up there? What the hell happened? And the doctor came in and said, ah, that's a nose and eyes. This baby is face presentation, which was, I was like, okay, fine. Who cares? Get it out. And she said, we can't deliver like that. We got to do a C-section, in which Sarah immediately starts crying. I don't want to. Okay, I'm nervous because I don't like hospitals to begin with. I guess face presentation when, like, the baby's coming out normal, except instead of, like, head being down, like, just face first and the back is doubled over, almost like it's bent in half and it can't get through the birth canal, which is scary. And as soon as she left, like, to say, I'm going to go let everybody know what we're doing, I take out the phone, I start Google searching face presentation, and you can find anything on the internet. Terrible things are living on the internet. Anything you think is possibly wrong with you, you will find is definitely wrong with you, and you are dying if you look hard enough at the internet. So, you know, I shared some things I kept to myself and quietly panicked while they brought me blue scrubs to wear. And it wasn't like an emergency or anything. Like, she said, we just need to get it out sooner than later. But, you know, we didn't get whisked off. She made the arrangements for the operating room. I think after she told us we had to have a C-section, the baby was out, like, in an hour and a half. So the guy had to come in, still do the epidural and all that stuff, and get ready to go down. Like, it was, we had enough time to wrap our heads around it. It wasn't like, oh, dear God, get down there now. We have to cut you in half. So they didn't do that. It's still scary. Still scary if anybody's been through that. You know, it's terrifying. I've never had surgery, but I know enough about myself to know that it would be a terrifying moment. There was a movie that came out a couple years ago. It was good. It was called 50-50. It had Seth Rogen and the kid from Third Rock from the Sun. What's his name? Gordon Joseph Levitt? I think that's it. He's in the newest Batman, too, in which he had cancer and they had to do surgery. And there's a moment in that movie right before, like, after they give him the anesthesia and they said, you're going to go under now, come back as a lieutenant, and he, like, looked and he, like, reached out for his mom. And that, like, really struck a chord. Like, I've only seen that movie one time several years ago, and that one little moment, and I got choked up, and I was like, yes, that is how I would feel, because they're like, there's a 50-50 chance you wake up from the surgery, and that's how I'd feel, even if they're like, hey, there's like a 99.9% chance you're going to wake up, I'm like, but there's still a chance that I don't, and that this is the end, so I'd probably write a book on right at the end, I'd be like, I have so much to tell the world, I record 1,100 podcasts, just so that you guys had something to remember me by. And so we went in, we did that. It was kind of weird as I was texting people that's what was happening. You know, I had a couple of, like, friends who are very familiar. We have got a friend that's a doula. My sister is very up on what's happening with pregnancy and deliveries, and they're both very firm, like, you are in charge, not the doctor, you're in charge. You know, my sister's one, you got to have a birth plan. You're going to want to know exactly what. And they asked us if we had a birth plan. And of course, my birth plan is, yes, do what you have to do so that everybody lives. That's the whole birth plan. I'm going to do what the doctor who we chose for all three of our babies, whatever she says goes. I'm going to look at her and be like, yeah. And she says, yeah. I go, yeah. Who am I? Like, I can Google search all day long. I'm still not going to know as much as her. And so, yeah, of course. Let's do whatever makes it so people live through this. Not being a single father. Not going down that road. And so we had it. I was in there in scrubs. Like, they had to get her ready, and then they called me in. And when they called me in, the baby was out in, like, 5 minutes. And they're like, Dad, you can stand up and look and take pictures. And I didn't know what I was going to see, to be honest with you. Like, there's a difference. When my first baby was born, I wasn't sure I was going to even look. Like, I was like, I'll hold a leg and look at my wife's head. And then, you know, at a certain point, they trick you. At a certain point, they're like, okay, Dad, we need you right here. And then you look and you're like, oh, dear God, yes, there's the baby. It's coming. And it's so, like, shock. It's not shocking. Shocking's not the right word. It's so, like, you're so in the moment that you don't, there's not a moment of, like, grossness or weirdness. It's just like, oh, I cannot believe what I am witnessing. And you can't look away. So that's a lot what this was. I stood up, I took a couple pictures, and it was like a blur down there. And, you know, just this messy, reddish blur. And then they pulled a baby out of it. And it was crazy. And there's this big sheet right in front of my wife's head, so she can't see anything. So I'm trying to talk her through it, tell her what's going on. Because when a baby gets positioned like that, I guess they say they do have complications a lot of the time. So our doctor said, when we take the baby out, it's going to go straight into the incubator so that we can, you know, might have to pat it on the back, which is a very light way of saying we're going to have to get forced breathing, like some sort of resuscitation, you know, make sure all the fluid's sucked out. Like, you know, she's saying it, she's got a very good bedside manner, which is almost one of my beefs with our doctor, is she's a little too cheery, like tell you what you want to hear, not what you, like, should hear or all that. And that's what the kind of stuff my wife needs. She needs that cheery. She needs to feel good. I need the fact, just give it to me so that I can process and decide. And so while she's saying all this, then I'm telling my wife, this is what's going to happen. Okay. And they pulled the baby out. She cried right away and immediately came over to us. Like, didn't have to go to the incubator at all. Just came right over. Baby was healthy. Sarah got through it, with flying colors, yet now she's walking around completely crippled. She just, like, is limping around. And I get it. She was sliced open and something was, like, forcefully removed from her body. I get it. So we're just trying to get through these next couple weeks. I've already had to cancel a couple shows in town here. Sorry if some of you guys were looking forward to that. I didn't have a lot of notice, so I really only could alert the guys that were running the show. And so I'm sorry if anybody came out to see me on Saturday or Monday or Tuesday. I just couldn't do it. I had to be here to help. But mother-in-law gets in today. And so we got extra help around the house, and I'll be able to get back out there, and I'm sure I've got lots to talk about. Coming up this week, you know, like I said, I don't want to make any promises, but I will post if I'm not going to make it out to these. But I've got on Tuesday, the 15th, I've got a show at Flights Bar down in El Segundo, and a comic by the name of Dave Williamson runs the Gundo Comedy Festival, which is in El Segundo, right around that time. So if you guys, you know, check out that website. I'm not sure, just Google search Gundo Comedy Festival, or if you're on the west side of Los Angeles. He's got lots of cool shows, some live podcasts, lots of great live shows, so check those out, and I'll probably be hanging around there as well. I think that's all I have this week. I'll probably do a couple little shows, but those are just jump shots. I'm just out there completely spitballing. Yeah, guys, this one thing I want to talk about is writing. Writing gigs come to you sometimes when you're a comedian and people want you to write something that's not necessarily stand-up. And I got one of these gigs. I've gotten a couple of these. I got one a few months ago. A really cool company out of Salt Lake hit me up. They had seen me do a show, and they wanted to see about hiring me to write one of their ad campaigns, which I was interested in. It sounded like a new challenge, something to do, so I agreed to it and wrote something I was proud of, very into it. But this is how I know that I'm a control freak, because as soon as I sent it in and started getting notes back, and some other people putting their input in, I could already tell there was something, okay, there was something there that was a compromise of what I thought was funny. And I understand the business of all that, and I understand the product and the client, and all those people have their says, because I've worked in that world before. But as a comedian for the last 12 years, I've had my own say. Like, everything I wanted, that's what I did. And nobody was there really to tell me, you know, outside of a couple of shows where, like, hey, stay away from this, or could you, you know, do you have anything like this? You know, I was in charge. I was the CEO. I was the guy that determined, is this funny? This is what I'm putting on stage then. And then I was at the mercy of the audience. And so I had to reckon with them. Okay, if they're not laughing, then I make changes. But what I put out there was up to me. Now, this is something I wrote, thought was funny, put out there, and then it kind of shifted into this whole other thing, which I get. I was paid, like the hooker that I am. I was paid, and then they could use it however they wanted. I get it. But this is how I know I'm a control freak and why I owe an apology to Bill Watterson, who I talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast, why I didn't understand why he wouldn't allow people to, you know, produce lunchboxes and backpacks and t-shirts with his product on it. Because, first of all, he didn't want to control all that, and he didn't want to not have control. I get it. That was his baby. I'm sorry, Bill. I'm sorry for questioning you. You were right. I sent this out, and I was very happy with it, and now they just posted the final product, and I'm kind of watching it and cringing. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, it might be very much what they need to sell, you know, so they did what they had to do, but from my standpoint, I was like, let me write the funniest ad I can and focus less on, you know, sales and more on watchability, which in the internet, in my opinion, is the bulk of your problem. If you can get people to watch it, then you might be able to sell to them. But if they're clicking on because it's not entertaining, then you have no hope of selling. So that's kind of what I was going with. And the final product came out, and it's hard for me to watch. It may be good to other people. It's hard for me to watch. Because I just see my ideas, and it's like a shell of an idea. And those guys are great dudes. They know what they're doing. So, you know, I'm sure they figured it out and figured out what they needed. It's just as a creator, it feels weird to me. Let me know if that's something that you guys have experienced. Like, what do you guys do in your everyday life, or what have you done before where you're kind of like, ah, I wish I had more control over this. I wish I had more control over that. And then what keeps you from having that control? In the future, I think if I got hired to do something like this, I would say, yes, I will do it, but I would also like to direct. Then I think I would have that additional control. Certainly, somebody still gets final cut. Until you have final cut, which is kind of the crown jewel of control. Like, if somebody has Final Cut, you A, know they're a control freak, and B, they are one of the most powerful people in that industry, because Final Cut is huge. I don't think I could ever command Final Cut at this point, but I think as a director, at least I'd be able to give them more of my vision. And God, does this sound douchey? I just said vision, and I felt douchey. I felt extreme douchebaggy when I said vision. But I guess that's why people say that. And I agree with it. I agree with it, man. It's like those people that that read a book and then they make a movie out of it and they hate the movie because they already had all these images in their head of what these characters look like and what this guy was doing and this part in the book wasn't in the movie. And that's kind of the same way I feel about it. Like, you get so invested in what you've done. And in this case, it was me creating it. So I got invested and I liked what I was making, and then this other thing came out of it. And I don't know. I don't necessarily like the feeling. I get it, but don't necessarily like it. I think in the future I would ask to direct, and then in the far future, final cut. That's the whole goal now, is to get final cut. Let's see. Other things happening. You guys knew I bought a van, so I'm selling the Toyota Camry right now. And popped it up on Craigslist, which, guys, we need to be better on Craigslist. I get it. It's the bottom rung of the internet. But as a society, as a country, we are only as good as our Craigslist interactions, okay? So I posted this, and I immediately had like 3 responses. I responded to all of them because I'm a gentleman. Because I'm a gentleman. I told everybody the deal. I was very forthright. Okay, this is what needs to be fixed on the car. This is what's wrong with it. And then one guy's like, I'm going to come up from Orange County to see it. I was like, great. You know this and this and this, right? Yes, I'll be right there. Okay, call me when you get here. He called me, he said, I'm here. I said, great, let me throw on some shoes, I'll be out. 3 or 4 minutes later, I'm out there. He's nowhere to be found. I'm texting him, hey man, I'm out here with the car. Nothing. I walk up and down the block, I don't see him, I'm calling him. It like does this little pickup thing and then hangs up over and over again. I'm texting him, hey man, here's where I am. Nothing. So this dude drove 45 minutes up from Orange County, said he was here. I went outside. He's not here. Now, either he was coming up to... Either something happened where he got up here and all of a sudden there's an emergency. He has to go and he doesn't have time to deal with me. Okay. Or he got up here and he was mugged. In which case, I'm probably suspect number one, since I was the Craigslist guy that he was interacting with. The police won't have a hard time finding me. And only be like, you're the Craigslist killer. You invite this guy up from Orange County, look at your 99 Camry, and this is the thanks he gets. There's that possibility. There's a possibility he was coming up here to kill me. And walked outside and saw my immense stature and said, there's no way I could take that guy. That's probably my first guess. As he took a look at my my beefcake muscles and said, oh, never mind. I can't have this guy. Or something went wrong with his phone. I don't know. But at any rate, I haven't gotten an email from him. I haven't gotten a text from him. It's been a day now. You know, it's a little bit like, you gotta be better than that, okay? Max from Orange County, you gotta be a little bit better than that. Unless you are dead, in which case, I get it, and the person that killed you needs to be a little bit better than that. Because guys, if we can't, the internet is filled with so much hate and crap that, like, that's where we have to be at our best, when we're not accountable for anything. People always like sending emails, nobody calls anymore, people are texting, because there's no accountability to that. There's no accountability to that. You can take your time and send what you want rather than being in the moment and having a human interaction. I think we need to do a little bit better. And maybe it's unfair of me to expect this out of Craigslist, but this is what I expect. The other issue I have is government control when it comes to the sales of motor vehicles. Because did you guys know that when you sell a used car, you have to collect sales tax and pay that to the government, and then you have to pay tax on the sales price? Did you guys know that? So the government got the money when the car was new off the lot. And, I mean, it's crazy when you actually go back and look at all the places that the government has its hand in over the life of a car. Like, all the parts manufacturers get taxed. When they pay someone, that pay is taxed. The building they rent to manufacture the parts is taxed. When they sell those parts to the manufacturer of the actual car, that gets taxed. The guys that manufacture the car, they're taxed on everything that I just said. The their building tax, the sales tax, the purchase tax, the payment tax, everything is taxed, and then they sell it to a dealership who gets taxed on that. The dealership sells it to you who gets taxed on that. The dealership gets taxed on their payroll and their income and their sales price and their purchase price. And then you drive that car, you get taxed every single year as you register it. You get taxed every single time you fill it up with gas. And then after 10 years, you're like, I'm going to sell this old pile of garbage. And then guess what? The government's like, well, we're going to tax you on it. And then they tax you again, and they tax the person that bought it. It's ridiculous. And the fact that governments can't balance the budget after all of these taxes, not to mention the fact that they're taking 1.5 of your 5 workdays wage, they're taking that from you, like, and they can't balance the budget. Are you kidding me? That's how I know we've grown too far. And you look no further than the sale of a used car to say, hey, the system is broken. And now, so California has these strict emissions policies where every other year you got to get it checked to make sure you're not going to create a bunch of smog. And this particular car, it passed the smog check except for the check engine light is on, which could be on for any number of reasons, but it's on. And so that immediately fails. Even if you're not, your emissions aren't bad, if that check engine light is on, you fail. So, I mean, come on. Those of you that know me know, like, if the car's running and the check engine light's on, that's fine. It's like you got a headache. You're not going to the doctor because you have a headache. You're just like, okay, I'm going to live with this. Or maybe your ankle hurts a little bit. You know, until it gets to the point where it's really impeding you, you don't need to address it. But now, it needs a smog check, and I read that, like, when you sell that car, you have to sell it as inoperable, so the next person has to get it smogged. So there's a little bit of gray area, but people knew all of that when I posted to Craigslist. But if any of you guys are in the Los Angeles area, and you're in the market for a 1999 Camry, hit me up, okay? Check my Craigslist ad. You'll find it there. The neighbor is off her meds again, because she has been, we just had a baby, so there's a little bit of, the other kids are kind of a little bit acting out, and a little bit like we can't, you know, be hawking over them at all times, because we've got another kid to deal with, and so they were running the other day, she started blasting rock music it was barely blasting, but you could tell she was trying, but it sounded like she just, like, had her iPad up all the way or something, and then she starts stomping, like I picture over there in combat boots, just stomping, and it really doesn't bother us. The only thing that bothers us is that we know she's losing her mind over there, so we still got that going on. Every time I pass her in the hall, she just won't even look at me. You know, I try and say hi, and she's just like, meh. You know, what are you gonna do? We've got kids. I imagine she doesn't have much interaction with people, so she has to, like, kind of lash out to feel like she has purpose or something. She needs to get a hobby. That's what she needs. She needs to get a hobby that's not stomping around in combat boots. Although, I don't care. Sarah said 2 days ago she was doing it at, like, 7:30 in the morning thinking that she was getting back at us, but I slept through the whole thing, and Sarah only heard it because she was up feeding the baby. So we got that going on a little bit more. It's going to come to a head at some point. It's got to. It's got to. That she, like, someone that's that out of control, and she, thus far she's only been out of control inside her own apartment, but eventually you think that's going to expand out of there, and in which case, that's not going to be a good situation. When she loses her mind outside of her apartment, I feel like Sarah looked her up one time, and she's been arrested a couple times. So you know it's already happened. And it just, we haven't seen it out in public yet. And we hear it on the other side of the wall. It's weird to hear someone losing their shit on the other side of the wall. And I've tried calling her. Nothing works. So we just sit over here and we say, well, there she's at it again. Try and keep the kids as quiet as we can, but I'm not going to sit here and put my thumb over my kids. I'm not going to do that. Okay? They're kids. So, you know, she's got to just make her peace with that or move on. Move to a quieter community. They exist. Okay? You can get into a 55-plus community where everybody's just slowly dying. People can do that. So, if that's something that she wants, you know, she has my blessing. So really, guys, that's what we got going on over here. I don't have a lot of shows in town. I've got a few. I already mentioned the one down in El Segundo. I've got one coming up in Santa Clarita on the 19th. And then the Starting Gate down in Orange County on the 22nd. So those will be fun shows. And then I always do a few shows here on the west side, just getting up and trying out new material. So I'll be doing that as well. So hit me up if you're in the Los Angeles area. Other than that, first out-of-town gig, like I said, is Wichita, May 31st through June 2nd. If you want to check that out, oop, alarm's going off, time for me to go to an audition. And yeah, got a big ol' commercial audition today, so go out there and try and sell you guys something with my general white guy face that just looks like the dude that came out of the next door. And maybe you're pissed at him and you wear combat boots and you stomp around, but you know what? You like what he drives. You want a piece of that. So maybe you guys will see me on TV and something soon. I'm sorry, that's it for the podcast this week. I've got a lot of things going on right now. I'm looking at my little baby girl sitting out there. She's awake, so I'm going to go say hi to her before I have to leave for this audition. But I got some more guests lined up. I'm recording with some other very funny people, so I hope you guys enjoyed the last few episodes where I had guests on. And that's going to become kind of a regular thing, and maybe every other episode or something where I have another guest on. So let me know if you guys are enjoying that. Hit me up. Post on iTunes. Give me a 5-star review. Say something nice. All that stuff helps. And I'll talk to you guys next week. Take care.